For this year, we are going to start the Buddhist forum, what we call Dhamsabha Mandapa. This is a reflection on the Dhamma, also is a discussion the Dhamma, focusing some sutras, discourses of the Buddha. We you know, this is the Vasana Kala. Vasana Kala is the important period for Buddhist people to practice spiritual practices, especially in the Vihara. We find monks observe rain retreats. So we we have some programs, especially for the Vasana period. One of them is a Buddhist forum, only for the Vasana period. So, Buddha said one of the blessings in the Mangala Sutta is Kalena Dhamma Sakaccha. Always we listen to the Dhamma. This is good. But special program for Dhamma discussion is very important. We can sharpen our knowledge, we can deepen our knowledge, we can widen our understanding. One of the reasons for, one of the factors of the Sammaditti to develop right understanding, there are two factors in the Anguttara Nikaya it says, Dhamma discussions and Yoniso Manasikara, wise attention. These two reasons, the factors conduce you to develop right understanding, Sammaditti. So this way, there are so many blessings, good advantages for Dhamma. We can have having Dhamma discussions. So therefore, this is time for all of us. A small introduction. We need a sense of spiritual urgency, what we call Sangviga, because this is a unique opportunity and rare opportunity. We all have been blessed with these opportunities. I remember a story during the Konagamna Buddha, five monks developed spiritual urgency. What they have done, these five monks together practiced meditation. Finally, they have very good enthusiasm for the spiritual practice. What they have done, they climb, they make a long ladder, long ladder, taking creepers and woods, you know, then put into a very high rock. And for all these five monks climb to the top of the rock. It's like a Sigiri rock, you think. What they have done, they climb there and throw away the ladder. Then they decide, okay, we meditate. If we are enlightened, we can levitate. Two monks became enlightened. Others were died without enlightenment. But they attain some kind of jhanas and they were born in Brahma realms. This is the way spiritual enthusiasm. In Buddhism says Sangvega is spiritual urgency. That is the introduction. So this is time for all of us. Opportunity. Rare opportunity. Today, as I we have said before, We choose the discourses from many hundreds of discourses of the Buddha, special discourses which were conducive for the enlightenment of the Buddha, monks. Only that discourses we choose. What was the discourse that monk became enlightened? Listen, while he was attaining enlightenment. That is important, isn't it? So therefore, not all the discourses, very, very important discourses. Then you can, there may be people who can click their mind and get some thoughts how we lead our life for the enlightenment. So this is the way we have chosen these discourses for the forum in the forthcoming terms. Also, today we have chosen Rahula Hamdru, the monk Rahula, who was the son of the Buddha. He became a monk when he was at the age of 7. Buddha went to Kapilavastu. Then Rahula was led by his mother, Yasodhara, said, go and ask inheritance from your father. Then little Rahula followed the Buddha, holding his robe, into the Jetavana monastery. Not into the Jetavana monastery, into the monastery. Then Rahula requested, I need your inheritance, my father. Buddha was thinking about the real inheritance is the noble inheritance. Arya Dhani. Then Buddha asked Venerable Sariputta, ordain Rahula. Then Buddha gradually trained him to become enlightened. Until he's a little boy, became a monk, then Buddha directed to the real point to become enlightened. So it's a process. It's a process. Not a simple, single discourse was sufficient to become enlightened for Rahula, little Rahula. Gradually, Buddha gave three main discourses to train him to become enlightened. So therefore, one is Ambalattika Rahulovada Sutta. Ambalattika Rahulovada Sutta is the first one we are going to discuss. Then, Maharahulovada Sutta, great discourse of the Rahula. That is very important. First one is connected with Sila. Second one is connected with meditation. And Chula Rahulovada, that means a lesser discourse. To Rahula, when he listened to Chula Rahulovada, Rahula became enlightened. So therefore, we need these three discourses together in this discussion. We discuss these three discourses. So therefore, the first one, Ambalattika Rahulovada. Ambalattika is a forest. Ambalattika was a forest where little Rahula was living there. Little Rahula was living there as a monk. Then Buddha thought, okay, I want to go to Ambalattika Vanaya, Ambalattika, where the little Rahula is living. Therefore, this is called Ambalattika Rahulovada Sutta. Buddha entered to that Ambalattika grove and met the Rahula, and Buddha gave this sermon, very important. When Rahula, little Rahula monk, had seen the Buddha was coming towards his monastery, to his place, he prepared, you know, hospitality in the monastery. very important hospitality in monasteries. We do. We wash the feet of the person who enter to the monastery. That is the first thing in hospitality in the monastery. Wash the feet. Even today, I know in Sri Lanka, not it is difficult to practice here, but in Sri Lanka, when the monks were invited for dana, they wash the feet of the monk. That is the hospitality. Nowadays it is difficult, no? We socks and singing. So therefore, look at that. When Rahula washed the feet of the Buddha, then Buddha clicked the time. This is the moment to give a lesson to Rahula. He didn't postpone the time. When he was washing, Buddha gave this first lesson to little Rahula. Then Buddha convinced him one important point. Now, Venerable Bandula, our in the panel, no need to introduce him. He is the senior monk in the Vihara. Venerable Aryaratana is our resident monk, senior monk. Venerable Kasapa and Venerable Panyavansa is the new resident monk of the Vihara. We all contribute in a way, then open the forum for the discussion. You can contribute, or you can, if you want to verify any points, you can ask questions to clear up your vision and knowledge, and then we can continue this discussion. First of all, I forgot to welcome you. All of you are very welcome to the program. Now the point is, I would like to in the Ambalattika Rahulvada Sutta, I would like to ask our brother monk Venerable Bandula Thera, what was the lesson taught by the Buddha to Rahula monk by using the artifacts of water and bowl? Artifacts means the washing his feet. The Buddha gave this lesson to Rahula.
Thank you, Venerable Sir. Before that, I have to mention that Venerable Rahula, he was ordained when he was 7 years old. It says that early morning, when he wake up, he gets some sand and throw into the air, saying that, "I would like to receive more advice from the elders, as like these sands." So it was his wish. He was always willing to accept all the advices from elders. So that was his life. So this point here, because, you know, 7 years old, he's a very small child. So Buddha, after ordaining him, Buddha has given some kind of very, we call it small type of, very easy understanding of things. So that is what we can find here. As you know, that as Most Venerable said, that we used to have the washing at the feet. Even when you go to India, you find everybody is having all those water things for different purposes. Same way, in the temples also they had those some kind of pot to wash the feet. Then they keep it, then they enter the temple. Because it is, you know, the long journey, they didn't wear the shoes and things, so they have to wash their feet to get cleanness. So that is why they use. Then Buddha deliberately left some water in that pot. And asked Rahula, "Have you seen that little water left in that pot?" "Yes, Venerable Sir." Then the Buddha said, even so little is the reclusive of those who are not ashamed to tell a deliberate lie. So that was the word Buddha used. Because the children, most of the time, they have they tell lies. I don't know whether Rahula said lies or not, but we don't have any clue on it. But the Buddha started not to tell lies, showing that if you tell lies, it is so little your reclusive, your status at the monkhood is so little. So that is what he wanted to show. Then what he did, Buddha did, Buddha threw away that water again. Have you seen that water is thrown away? Yes, Venerable Sir. Then Buddha said, even so, you will throw away your reclusive if you tell deliberate lie. That was the second way of it. Then Buddha made the pot upside down. Then Buddha asked Rahula, have you seen that pot is now up and up down? Yes, Venerable Sir. It is the Buddha said, even so, those who are not ashamed of tell lie, deliberate lie, have turned their reclusive upside down. That means when you tell lies, then your monkhood goes up and down, upside down. Then the other one, Buddha said, Buddha then again turned the other way around, now facing. Then have you seen that now this empty and hollow, this pot? Yes, Venerable Sir. Then Buddha said, if you tell deliberate lie, it will reclusive, your monkhood, also going to be hollow and empty. So that is the analogy, that is the example Buddha showed Venerable Rahula to explain not to tell deliberate lie in the monkhood life. Monkhood life, it is very important. So Buddha gave that one. Then again Buddha has given further, going away from this pot, he got another example about the elephant. Elephant, when he in a battle, the caretaker of the elephant see that elephant is using all his body to fight, but apart from tusk, his trunk, apart from trunk, then he said he is not doing his duty, but the other way around, the elephant is using all his body parts and also the trunk. That time he thinks this elephant can do whatever he wants to do. He will fight. But the same way Buddha explained, the protecting of the trunk is important here, because if you are using it, if you use that one, then you can do whatever things you destroy or anything. The same way, if you tell lies, then you can do all the other unwholesome deeds. So that is what Buddha wanted to show that. Because telling lies, see, when you tell lies, then you have to cover it up, then you have to tell another lie, and also the ability for something. And also, if you are doing unwholesome deeds, it has to be covered with the lie. In this way, Buddha explained, the liar can cover. A liar can do many unwholesome deeds. So don't tell lies. So that was the first lesson in the Ambalattiko Rahulavada Sutta explained in this sutta. So it was the very important for a small child to give understanding what happened if you tell lie as a novice monk. So that is my answer, Venerable.
Thank you, Bandhulandro. Now we going to discuss another point in the Ambalattika Rahulavada Sutta. It is very clear, the first point has been explained by Venerable Bandhula Thera. It's very clear now. The second question for the discussion, in the Ambalattika Rahulavada Sutta, while training Rahula Thera, Buddha used some kind of artifacts, some analogies, some similes, because he was a very little boy, little monk. Then Buddha asked, how one can decide whether the actions performed by mind, words or body wholesome or unwholesome, using some kind of techniques or using artifacts, similes. Buddha asked, giving an example like what is the purpose of mirror, etc. I would like to ask our brother monk, Venerable Kassapa Thera, how one can decide whether the action performed by mind, words and body wholesome or unwholesome.
Most Honorable Mahasangha, dear friends. Yes, in the latter part of the same sutta, Ambalattika Rahulavada Sutta, we find that another lesson taught by the Buddha to Venerable Rahula, that is, he started the lesson by asking the question that Nayakamdru just mentioned, what is the purpose of the mirror. So, in replying to the question, Venerable Rahula said, the purpose of the mirror is to see the reflection. So, and from that point onwards, Buddha went on to give him very good lesson, and which is, in a way it was simple, but very profound and very logical, to determine whether the actions performed by our mind, our words and our body, those are the three ways that we perform actions. Either by mind, those are called the mental actions or mental deeds. The second way is by words, those are called the verbal actions or verbal deeds. And the third way is by using our physical body, the bodily actions and bodily deeds. So, in performing either mental action, verbal action or bodily action, to determine whether they are wholesome or unwholesome, we need to reflect repeatedly. Just like we see our own reflection on the mirror, we can see whether they are good or bad by reflecting. So when reflecting, according to the lesson, according to the teachings that Buddha taught to little Rahula, we need to do it in three times. I mean, in three times. Before we do actions, before we perform any actions by either mind, words or body. And while the actions are being done, we have to reflect. And thirdly, when the actions have been performed, have been done, we have to reflect. So I'll start with the first part. Whenever we are going to perform an act by mind, by word, or by body, we need to reflect whether this act would lead to my own affliction or whether it would lead to affliction of others. In other words, whether this act which I am going to perform, either by mind or my words or my body, whether it would be beneficial to me and beneficial to others. So if you understand that the action you are going to perform, either by your mind or your word or by your body, is or it would lead to my own affliction or the affliction of the doer, and also if it would lead to the affliction of others, you should determine that those acts performed by mind, body and words are unwholesome acts, because they would bring you unhappy consequences, and they would bring you unhappy results, because those acts would lead to your own affliction and at the same time the affliction of others. So you should not do those kind of acts, either by your mind, by your words or by your body. That is how to determine. And in repeating the same way, if you understand that these acts that you are going to perform by your mind, by your body and by your words would not lead to your own affliction and would not lead to affliction of others. In other ways, if they would be beneficial to you yourself, and whether they would be beneficial to others, you can determine, you should determine that those acts are wholesome acts. So you can continue, to perform those acts by your mind, by your words and by your body. So that is how to determine. That's the first time. And the second time, while the actions are being done, when you are performing any acts by using your words, by using your mind and by using your physical body, you should still reflect repeatedly whether these acts that I am performing by using my body, mind or words, are they leading to the my own affliction, or are they leading to the affliction of others, or in other words, are they beneficial to me or are they beneficial to others? If you understand that they are leading to your own affliction and they are leading to the affliction of others, you should suspend, you should stop doing those kind of acts by using your mind, body and words, because they are unwholesome acts. And in reflecting like that, if you understand that the actions you are performing by using your mind, body and words, they are not leading to your own affliction and they are not leading to the affliction of others. They are beneficial to you and they are beneficial to the others. So you can determine that those acts are wholesome acts, and you can continue to do those kinds of acts or deeds by using your mind, body and words. And finally, once you have done any acts by using your mind, body and words, you still should reflect whether the acts that you have performed, did they lead to your own affliction, and did they lead to affliction of others. If you understand that they led to affliction of others and they led to your own affliction, you should not repeat doing those kinds of acts by using your mind, body and words, because they are unwholesome acts. But when reflecting thus, if you understood that those acts did not lead to your own affliction and they did not lead to the affliction of others, they were beneficial to you, they were beneficial to others, you can continue to do those kinds of acts by using your mind, body and words, because they do not bring you unhappy consequences. They do not bring you unhappy results. They always bring you happy consequences and happy results. So that is the way how to determine the acts that you perform by your mind. Those are the mental acts or mental deeds, or by your words, the verbal acts, and by your body, the physical, bodily acts. That is the way to determine whether they are wholesome and unwholesome. So the logic is simple but profound. We need to see whether they are beneficial to yourself and beneficial to others. If you see they are beneficial to both parties, you can regard them as wholesome acts. If not, you can regard them as unwholesome acts, and you should not do those. You should not continue to do unwholesome. You should continue to do what you see as the wholesome earth. So that is the latter part of Ambalattika Rahulavada Sutta. The Buddha was teaching little Rahula how to determine the acts that you perform by your mind, body and words, whether they are wholesome and unwholesome.
Thank you, Venerable Kassapa. It's very clear and very good explanation you have made. And I hope you all agree so far the discussion was connected, focus on Ambalattika Rahulavada Sutta. Now that discourse, only 2 points we have discussed. Then next part or next discourse, which was given by the Buddha to Venerable Little Rahula, was Maharahulavada Sutta. It is utterly connected with meditation. Seems to me Ambalattika Rahulavada connected with karma and morality. This is connected with meditation. So therefore, one day, Buddha was going in the morning, going with little Rahula to the city, 4 hours round. Then Buddha asked from the little Rahula. Only they were walking to the city on arms round. Then Buddha look at Rahula. He was very much aware about how this little Rahula direct to the right path. Still he was very young. You can imagine, visualize. Buddha was going first and Rahula was fine following him. Little Rahula taking a bowl. Buddha was taking a bowl, both together, walking to the city. You can visualize a beautiful image. So like that way, Buddha turned back and looked at back the Rahula and asked, Rahula, is there anything that you can take? This is mine. This is I. This is myself. Like that way, you can get anything? Then the Rahula answered, material form. Only material form, blessed one. Only material form, sublime one. This is the thing. We can take anything, the material thing. Then the Buddha said, material form, Rahula, and feeling, perception, formation, and consciousness. Nothing can be taken as this is mine and myself, etc. So taking, then after that, Rahula soon after finished his dana food, he sat down under a tree and he started to practice meditation. According to this discourse, seems to me, Sariputta saw him sitting there and went there. Sariputta, Buddha's chief disciple, went there, Rahula, and addressed Rahula. Rahula, develop mindfulness of breathing. When mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, it is of great fruit and great benefit. Then encourage him to do. In the evening, Rahula went in the Dhamsabha Mandapa like that, like this. Buddha was the chair of the Dhamsabha Mandapa. Rahula asked this question from the Buddha. Venerable sir, how is mindfulness of breathing developed and cultivated so that it is of great fruit and benefit? He asked from the Buddha. Buddha explain in this discourse five elements, then internally and externally, these elements explain there is nothing. I would like to ask Venerable Aryaratana Thero is a Dhamma teacher in the Vihara, and he has very good knowledge about meditation, has written a very good, wonderful book about meditation. I would like to ask Venerable Aryaratana Thero, how can we realize non-self teaching, vanatta, focusing on five elements? Venerable?
Thank you, Bhante. Good evening. Now, most venerable Rahula, though he is so small, very important, and he plays a major role as one of the 80 eminent arahants. And because of Venerable Rahula, they are laid so many disciplinary rules, and the story of Rahula set a very good example for the young kids, the Buddhist kids, and the wonderful song written by the head monk of the Vihara, Venerable Sila Vimala, sung on every Sunday, shows the life story of Rahula, Venerable Rahula. And what was heard by you before me was all about his life and the ethical grounds. The first approach in Buddhism is the virtues, sila. Now, this is how one should train oneself, first of all, before anything else. So, in the Ambalattika Rahulovada Sutta, the discourse preached at Ambalattika, or the mango stone or whatever, to the instructions given to little Rahula, shows the ethical ground of the teachings, and one should basically first train oneself with the virtues, to live a virtuous life. And then eventually comes to the concentration level. Now, Buddha was following Rahula at all times. That's why he admonished before he set off to the town for alms food, Rahula. He didn't say go back and sit under a tree, but he said, Rahula, to concentrate on his own breathing. And he was puzzled. Just a little monk was asked to go back and sit somewhere calm and quiet and practice meditation, breathing meditation. And this little Rahula was sitting down and was seen by Venerable Sariputta. And then only Sariputta told him how to practice the breathing meditation. Before that he said, now there is two. Now, basically we know this existence, this body and mind, nama and rupa, makes oneself. Because of our ignorance, we see that there is something, somebody. But essentially, this so-called body, so-called person, or any phenomenon, is made up of two basic components. One is the body, and the other is the mind. Now, this is too much for Venerable Rahula. So Buddha skillfully tried to give sort of understanding to little Rahula by looking into the materiality of the phenomenon. So he said, Rahula, look at this materiality, solidity, and look at the water element, the liquidity, and look at the fire, the heat element, and look at the wind, the air element. And of course, all these four exist in the space. So look at the space and take them, for example, an object to your meditation, and be like the solidity of the earth. Try to be like water. And try to practice, try to be like fire and air and space. Now how? Whatever is agreeable or non-agreeable, pleasant, unpleasant, is put on the earth. The earth will not be pleasant or unpleasant to what is put on the earth. It will just bear and be unbiased, be so passive, and not being angry or whatever. And when we put something pleasant or unpleasant on the water or in the water, that will just be like anything, but not taking it as pleasant or unpleasant. Will not get angry or quit. So likewise, the materiality, and then comes to feelings, perceptions, formations, and consciousness, etc., etc. So whatever is arisen, whatever is vanished, the whatever is like dirty things and excrement, urine, spittle, pus, and blood on the earth, and the earth is not so, etc., etc., the discourse explains. And disgust because of that, so to Rahula, develop meditation that is like the earth, that is like the water, that is like the air, and that is like the space. So this was the teachings that firstly we see in the Maharahulavada Sutta, and through which the Buddha tried to show, to get the answer from little Rahula, to know that this body is only a materiality or a material form or perception, feelings, and from vijnana, consciousness, etc., etc., not something permanent. Not something permanent. So little Rahula understood that if the body is made up of elements, there is no one within. There is no one in. So the question in Pali, he said, Netang mama neso hasmi nameso atta. And this is not mine. This I am not. And this is not myself. So by this analogy, this explanation to little Rahul, he finally understood that this body is not his, and this is not, this doesn't belong to him. So in this way he understood the teaching of non-self, this characteristic of non-self of any phenomenon. Thank you.
Thank you, Arigato Hamdro. Internally and externally. Internally and externally means within mind and body and without mind and body. So this way, there is no so-called atta. So, thank you very much. Now, little Rahula, when he became a monk, he was at the age of 7. But when he became enlightened, he was not a 7-year-old monk. He was 20s, in his 20s. So, in this discourse, Maharavalovada Sutta, there is a very beautiful explanation about Anapanasati Bhavana. Practice of mindfulness of breathing meditation. So, Venerable Panyavansa is our resident monk now. He had been in Burma undergoing meditation training for many, many years. We are very fortunate now. He will contribute for this question about the mindfulness of breathing, the systems. I would like to ask this question, because in the Maharavalovada Sutta, the latter part explained the mindfulness of breathing according to the systematic way. There are 16 modes of Anapanasati mentioned in this sutta, 16 ways. Could you explain how one can practice in 16 ways the Anapanasati? In briefly, I would like to ask Venerable Panyavansa Thero.
With the permission of the Mahasangha, in the Rahulovada Sutta, the 16, actually these are stages of Anapanasati. It is like guidelines given by the Buddha to Rahula about the experiences that you would have to go through, or you would have to guide yourself through while you practice Anapanasati. So initially these 16 factors are not explained in the Rahulovada Sutta. It is actually explained in the Anapanasati Sutta, in the Majjhima Nikaya, Sutra number 118. So for your reference, if you want to go back home, if you are interested, by all means. The Anapanasati, the factors, the 16, I think it's like a pot of gold, you know, because it gives us a direct guideline to whatever you will face as a beginner or as a seasoned meditator, and it gives you clear knowledge of what you have to know to guide yourself through. So initially, there is no time actually to, you know, explain all the 16 in detail, but I will, I think, touch on the most intricate parts of what the Buddha is trying to mean here, so that you will get the essence of it. So the first one being, I breathe in long, I breathe out long. Basically, now this is basically the breath is talking about nothing particularly. There's nothing to read between the lines. The Buddha is initially talking just about the breath, where you focus your attention on the breath and you develop your focus upon the breath. Now, here, this part belongs to the Kayanupassana section of the Satipatthana. Alright? The Kayanupassana, the first part of it, is initially where you focus your mind on the breath. So, this, of course, when you go through these 16, you can, of course, understand it by means of a person starting to come into the practice of Anapanasati. You can also understand the same thing as a person who is in the brink of attaining jhanas. Same ways you can understand it, but you'll have to actually, we'll have to discuss it in great detail if you are to understand this sutta in both of that those ways. I breathe in long, I breathe out long. Initially it refers to the breath, where you focus your attention on the breath. I breathe in short, I breathe out short. Again, the same thing, nothing. Not astrophysics, just the breath. I shall breathe in experience in the whole body. That is what it stated. The whole body here speaks of the whole body of the breath. Here, the whole body of the breath means the middle, the beginning, the middle, and the end. Alright. Now, what? So I'll combine both. I shall breathe in experience in the whole body. I shall breathe out experience in the whole body. So, tentatively, people tend to fall into trouble in doing Anapanasati at this section. Why? Because when you try to evaluate the beginning, middle, and the end of the breath, you tend to turn the whole practice into Vedananupassana, and you continue doing Anapanasati, not Anapanasati, but Vedananupassana, and you drift away from Anapanasati because you focus your attention on the sensations arising due to the movement of the wind element rather than the wind element itself. Do you understand? Right? So basically, when the Buddha tells you focus on the whole breath, what is intended, the intended meaning is that you use the Vedana to see the air element, not use the air element to see the wind element. Use the air element to see the sensation. Do you understand? And that is a starting of, that is the ending, that is also a part of the Kayanupassana. Do you understand? All right. Then I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the bodily formation, and I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the bodily formation. This bodily formation refers not to the body, it refers to the breath again. Now, tranquilizing, when you do Anapanasati, this part is actually well explained in the Satipatthana Sutta. Alright, not even in the Anapanasati Sutta. This part is explained well in the Satipatthana Sutta, where the Buddha speaks about you initially when you get into meditation and your breath is like normal, you know. That breath, you have to make a determination as you calm down and as you are convicted into the practice of Anapanasati, you determine onto yourself to make the breath calmer. Alright, it will not happen. It'll happen, but it'll take a long time if you let it happen on its own, right? So, you determine onto yourself and you tell yourself, may my breath be calmer, may my breath be calmer. You just tell yourself what to do. You don't try to manipulate the breath in any stand. In any of these stands, you do not manipulate the breath at all. Of course, there is another practice of meditation. We say, you know, it's the same Anapanasati, but they do it in a different way. How is that? Anapanasati is the, what is, the involuntary breath. Then there is a practice of meditation done with the voluntary breath. How is that? this was initially my question when I visited the center. I asked them, Bhante, what if you have a cold? You know, they said, then you can't do it. You know, so initially, You do the breath, in-breath and out-breath, so fast, so that you tire yourself, you tire your mind. And when your mind is now tired, you instill yourself on the object faster. And at that moment, it opens up the doorway for you to get absorbed into any object that you put yourself in front of. Do you understand? That's another technique. Do not confuse it with this technique. In this technique, according to Anapana and the Satipatthana, you do not control the breath in at any time. Then, the next one is, I shall breathe in experiencing rapture. I shall breathe out experiencing rapture. I'm going to talk about the other one together with this. I shall breathe in experiencing pleasure, and I shall breathe out experiencing pleasure. Now, rapture, the Pali word is piti, zest. And for pleasure, they use the word pleasure. It's happiness, or that's the common term used, or sukha in Pali. Now, it is very difficult to initially differentiate between a breath which is pleasurable or with zest, and a breath which is instilled with sukha. All right? Do you understand? Ternoada. You're looking at me like you've seen a ghost. All right. So zest is initially, it is said when a man is in a desert, he sees water and he drinks water. All right. He's so thirsty. He sees water in the desert and he drinks water. It is explained to differentiate zest. This is the example which is given in the Vishuddhi Magga, where they explain that when you see the water, that is zest. All right? Rapture. And when you drink the water, that is the initial sukha. The sukha is more connected with initially experiencing the object at that moment. The zest is more of, you see the object over there. You see that your breath is now, your anapanasati has, the concentration has instilled itself within you. Now you are going to attain rapture. You see that. You're going to attain some sort of bliss through the anapanasati. So that is zest. It's more of a happiness based on something that you're going to attain seconds in the future. Do you understand? Alright. So this zest is initially this zest and happiness or sukha, the piti and the sukha, they're talking about the initial application into, or the entrance into jhana, absorption. Do you understand? Into absorption. How do we understand this? Because of the zest and the sukha being there, you know, vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata. Alright? So, vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha is talking about these four. Initially when you enter into a jhana, or before you enter into a jhana, now when you are, I think all of you all have done even 5 minutes of anapanasati in your life, alright? So when you are doing so well, okay, especially when you go through 30 to 45 minutes or 45 minutes plus, you tend to feel this enormous amount of happiness. It's very calming, it's very soothing, you're very happy that you finally managed to do 30 minutes or 45 minutes, and it really gives you this awe-inspiring feeling of freedom within you, like you've just attained, alright? Now this feeling is a result of this zest and happiness or sukha. Initially, when zest and sukha exist to that amount, you get very excited. In those moments, what happens to you is that you feel like getting up and going and telling your friend that you've just done well. Or you feel like you go and, you know, speak to the Hamdro and tell, oh, Bante, my meditation was good. Or you just get up and feel like, you know, you should just go and do a Vandana or something like that. That is initially when the zest and the sukha increases. Through that, because of your attachment to the pleasure aspect, which is then a upaklesha, the upaklesha arises through the zest and the sukha. Did you understand? So, here, after, because of this zest and preeti, the preeti and the sukha, the Buddha says, the next method is, I shall breathe out experiencing pleasure. I shall breathe in experiencing mental formation. I shall breathe out experiencing mental formation. What this means is now, when you initially come into Anapanasati and you've experienced now zest and sukha, alright, piti and sukha, now you need to know the mind which is going into experiencing that. The mental formations, what you initially, how do you initially know now upaklesha is going to arise? Because you breathe out and in experiencing mental formations. You are aware that your mental formations have now either developed or they are going to be destroyed by the infliction of having or being excited by the zest and the sukha. Did you understand? Alright. So you can ask questions later on. So, the mind gets excited. And how you know that the mind gets excited is because of this factor here. While the mind is aware that it is breathing out, experiencing mental formation, and it is breathing in, experiencing mental formation. Then because the Buddha knew that you're going to mess it up because of the existence of pleasure within your meditation, at that time the Buddha says, now you have to just take a step back and calm yourself down. That is where the step comes. I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the mental formations. I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the mental formations. How do you tranquilize? Tranquilize through prajna awareness. You tranquilize by knowing what is going on. Do you understand? By you being oblivious to the fact that this rapture, that zest and happiness or pleasure is going to create that a doorway for the upaklesha to arise, but you are oblivious to the fact because you enjoy the zest and the pleasure. You enjoying being a person who has been accomplished in 30 minutes of meditation. You have these egos coming up, you know. Right? When you do 1 hour meditation, you feel like somehow you must get it through to another person. Right? these are the upakleshas coming. And the Buddha saw that. And that is why the Buddha says, now, take a step back, tranquilize yourself. You know, just realize that this is not the end of the world, or this is not the be it all, end all. This is just a fetter arising. Calm down. And this is nothing to fret over. Do you understand? How do you do that? You look at the past now. You don't open your eyes. Or even if you do, you go back into meditation. You look back at the zest or the happiness which has arose or the pleasures that you have had before that. And you just know that this is a quality which needs to be dealt with what? Equanimity. Do you understand? Moving on. I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the mental formations. I shall breathe in, experiencing the mind. I shall breathe in, experiencing the mind. Here, it refers to the attainment. Here, it refers to this section, the continuing four, will refer to the maintenance of the dhyana. Alright. Now, with the priti and the sukha and all of that, you, if you did not fall into, succumb to kilesa, you have now attained the jhana, or you've come close to the jhana, or you are just getting the nimitta. Alright? Now, how do you maintain your nimitta? That is what the Buddha is telling now. Talking about now. Experiencing the mind. Here, experiencing the mind is, now, you know those, you know those experiences where you meditate and you feel the breath and all of a sudden the breath disappears, right? The breath disappears, but it comes back again, right? For some, the breath just disappears and you forget about it. For others, you're just in the mentality without a breath. You're just there. Now, this is where you have now become one with the mind. So now, before you saw the breath, now you become the mind which sees the breath. Did you understand? You can't understand this like that. Why are you lying? Okay. Now, when you're initially breathing, I'm breathing, although I'm talking to you, I'm breathing. But this is an involuntary action right now. Alright? This is an involuntary action right now. But I'm breathing. And I'm talking to you. So my main focus is in the words and the matter that I'm telling you. But yet the breathing is happening. And in meditation, I stop speaking, I stop looking, and I focus. I start looking at this breath here. I see the breath as an object. Do you understand? Now, when my mind keeps on looking at the breath as an object, what happens is now I stop looking at the breath as an object and I become the mind which does the breath itself. Do you understand? Without the mind, the breath doesn't carry out, isn't it? The mind is what helps in these involuntary actions. So what happens is you go into the subconscious where you become the mind. And that is why you can't see the breath, because you are the mind. So if, for example, the mind is like this and it's going like this in the breath and you're looking at it from here, now what's happening? You are the mind. So you can't see the breath. All right? But because your attention cannot be carried out, because your strength of focus is not powerful enough, you tend to be the mind, come out of the mind. Be the mind, come out of the mind. Do you understand? That is what it is meant here. I shall breathe in experiencing the mind. Do you understand? Do you clearly understand? If you don't, you can ask questions. Then, yes, here it is. I shall breathe in gladdening the mind. I shall breathe out gladdening the mind. Now what is this gladdening of mind? Now, initially, when you have now lost your breath, or you stop seeing the breath, at this moment is where you start seeing some sort of a nimitta. When you initially start seeing some sort of a nimitta, that is when, now this nimitta, you can't attain a jhana unless the nimitta is strong. Alright? So the nimitta to be, you know, for example, you have gone through a lot of experiences, but for someone to captivate your mind, it needs to be a beautiful, or someone who leaves a good impression in your heart, mind and soul, right? Similarly, this nimitta, if it is dull and, you know, shabby, you know, your mind will not be able to attain a jhana or an absorption having that nimitta as a base. That is why you have to gladden your mind, make yourself happy. How do you make yourself happy? How do you make yourself happy? You focus more on the zest and the sukha aspects of the nimitta. Alright? And as you do focus on that, as you focus, now there are ways of focusing. Oh gosh, this is a long topic. There are ways of focusing. You can focus on the middle point of the jar, of the nimitta. And as you focus on the middle point of the nimitta starts to become brighter and brighter. Sometimes when people are very fussy, when people have a lot of vitarkas, what happens is they find faults with the nimitta, right? They find faults, oh, this is not straight, there are holes in the nimitta, there are small, you know, crumbles which are not there. You find faults with the nimitta, it's not the perfect color. So when that happens, then we look at the nimitta from afar, and then we start looking at the whole nimitta, but to the middle. To the middle. When you focus on the middle, the nimitta will change its color and take the color which most of the nimitta parts has. So if it's like a greenish blue, alright, and the blue part is more in percentage than the green part, then it'll take that part which has most of the color. Then as it changes into the majority of the color, then slowly it will become brighter and brighter and brighter. And that will initially increase, that is a signal that the pleasure that you're getting off the absorption or the nimitta is much, much more than it was before. Do you understand? And it is when this nimitta turns from a ugha to a patibhaga, patibhaga to a prabhasha nimitta, that this nimitta will turn into a sun-like disc, where your mind will be so engrossed with this nimitta that it will get absorbed into it. Do you understand? But don't think of this like a black hole where the nimitta absorbs your mind. It is when like your mind is taken up by the color, by the glory, by the lustre, by the beauty of the nimitta, that your mind doesn't want to go anywhere else. sometimes people tend to play with it. So when you want to develop powers, we play with it a bit, and then you go into powers. That's a different topic. It's not together with this vipassana, what the Buddha is trying to tell here. So that's what gladdening of the mind is. Do you understand? Not perfectly, but at least a little, yeah? Okay, good. Then, shall breathe in, concentrate in the mind. Concentrate in the mind is now, I actually covered concentrating of the mind now. Concentrating on the mind is that initial focus that you give to the nimitta and make it powerful and powerful. Alright? Moving on. Sustaining the nimitta. I shall breathe in, contemplate. No. Oh gosh, I'm skipping. I shall breathe out, concentrate in the mind. I shall breathe in, liberate in the mind. I shall breathe out, liberate in the mind. Now, liberating the mind speaks about sustaining the nimitta and also sustaining the nimitta and freeing the mind from the nimitta. Do you understand? Sustaining the nimitta, it is through sustaining the patibhad, the prabhasha nimitta, which is like the sun disk, that you will initially develop the time enough for you to get absorbed into it. Now, when you're absorbed into it, you do not catch hold of the nimitta and think of the nimitta. You have to let the nimitta go for yourself to be able to get absorbed. Do you understand? And you only bring back the nimitta when you figure out, okay, this jhana is not enough. I need to go to the second jhana. So then you bring back the nimitta from the first jhana and you say, this nimitta is gross because of the vitakka, the vichara, the piti, the sukha, the ekagata. I need to relax. I need to be more calm, more free from all of these vitakkas and the vicharas. So I need to let go. That is the point where you bring the nimitta back. Alright, before that is where you do your anapanasati in a way that you will be liberating the mind. Liberating the mind here, not from the kilesas, liberating the mind from the nimitta that you have used to get to the jhana. Do you understand? You understand. This is actually quite tricky because your mind doesn't want to let go at this point. It's quite tricky. So your mind doesn't want to let go. So most of these jhana practitioners, what we've experienced is we tend to actually play with the nimitta for days and days and days, you know. So until like your teacher really comes and gives you a kick and tells you, look here, open your eyes, get out of it, you know. Because it's such a pleasurable feeling. It's such a pleasurable feeling. So the next one is I shall breathe in contemplating impermanence. Impermanence. Here, these are steps which you initially take after you emerge from the jhana. So now it's talking about the kayanupassana part, spoke about initially developing what is necessary to go into jhana. The vedanupassana's part spoke about the arising of the jhana factors within you to support you in the attainment of the nimitta. Then the chittanupassana spoke about the attainment of the nimitta and the attainment of the jhana. Jhana was liberating the mind. And then the last part where the Dhammanupassana speaks about letting go of the jhana and letting go of nama rupa itself. Do you understand? The Dhammanupassana part focuses on vipassana. Right? So, vipassana, the first one is initially contemplating on impermanence. Contemplating on impermanence based on, there's no need to explain a lot today, but it's initially Rupa Vedana Sanya Sanskara Vinyana, the five aggregates of clinging, and you conduct your Anapanasati now, looking back, recollecting the jhanas, the jhana factors, what you have undergone within the jhana, and you know for yourself, look here, I had a jhana 5 minutes ago, now I'm out of my jhana. That jhana energy will also help you to penetrate deeper into realizing that nama and rupa are two. Nama comes into arising and falls apart. Rupa similarly arises and decays, falls apart. That energy from the jhana will help you to penetrate deeper into that. Alright, I'm going to skip because I'm taking all of Bhante's time. Contemplating on the fading of way. That's the viraga. The viraga part, the contemplation of fading away, viraga is the getting rid of lust. You do this if the Panchupadanaskanda or the contemplation of the aggregates of clinging is too heavy for your mind. Sometimes it's difficult for a person to contemplate on the five aggregates of clinging because there are five aggregates. It's a bit heavy. Alright? So because sometimes it's a bit heavy for some people can. While for others, it's a bit heavy, the Buddha has prescribed, okay, if that doesn't work, you do this. What is this? Viraga. You develop distastefulness towards the jhanas and namarupa, towards initially the parts which is conducive to your clinging. The rupas, the namas, all of that. Alright. Then it is the contemplation of cessation, the nirodha. Alright. Seeing, knowing that this is through experience. At this point, it's not something that you are reading off a book and you're trying to implicate it to yourself. This is very, very real at that time. Alright. You would see all of this just as I am seeing you and you are seeing me right now. You would see these things within you. Alright. At that time, you will be able to see the arising, the processing and the falling apart. At this point, you focus on the cessation, the falling apart, and the final one, patinissagga. Alright? Patinissagga is the letting go, coming out of the clinging towards the nama and the rupa. Okay? Those are the 16 factors of anapanasati.
Thank you very much sharing your experience and knowledge with us. It's very good. That is the end of Maharahulovada Sutta. Buddha trained him. So far, he had gained good instructions and experience. Yet, Rahula was not enlightened. Now, one day, Buddha was in the Jetas Grove, Anathapindika. He had this thought in his mind. Then the wild Buddha, Blessed One, was alone in meditation. A thought arose in his mind thus. The state that ripened in deliverance have ripened in Rahula. Buddha's mind focus on Rahula's state of mind. Then he, suppose I were to lead him on further to the destruction of the taints, killers. This is the idea came to the mind of the Buddha when he was meditating. Now this is the right time. Then when it was morning, the Blessed One, dressed and taking his bowl and outer robe, went into Savatthi for his alms. Then he entered the blind man's grove, that the Pali word is Andavane, where the Rahula was there. Buddha went there. Rahula, take your sitting cloth with you. Rahula, let us go to blind men's grove to pass the day. He was not in the Andavane, but Buddha invited him to go to Andavane, taking your sitting cloth. Especially it wants to practice meditation. Yes, Venerable Sir, the Venerable Rahula replied. And taking his sitting cloth with him, he followed the cloth behind the Blessed One. Now on the occasion, many thousands of deities follow the Blessed One, thinking, today the Blessed One will lead the Venerable Rahula further to the destructions of the taints. Then, I'm very excited. You see, Buddha was going with him. Then Buddha addressed Rahula. I quote, Rahula, what do you think? Is the I permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, Venerable Sir. This is the question. is what is impermanent, suffering and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus. This is mine, this is I am, this is myself. Is it fit to be? It is suitable. Is it fit to be think, thought like this way, this is mine, I am. Because it is subject to change, subject to suffering, subject to impermanence. This is the way he opened the door of nirvana to Rahula. Then Rahula, what do you think? Are forms? Is eye consciousness? Is eye contact? Is anything comprised within the feeling, perception, formation and consciousness? That arise with the eye contact as condition, permanent or impermanent. This way, all these things, consciousness, eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness, all these have taken one by one, with the question, Rahula, are they permanent or impermanent? Are they subject to change or not? This way, is there any self, any entity, which is not subject to change in this mind and body? Can you recognize? This is the way he leads to him to do vipassana. So Rahula was in his final stage. Buddha opened the Amadwara, nirvanic door, and lead him to attain nirvana, focusing his mind on impermanence, suffering and non-self. So this is the final stage of Buddhist meditation, as well explained by my brother monk Venerable Panyavansa concentration. So now Venerable Aryaratana would contribute something about vipassana. Then other also, Venerable Bandula Thero, Venerable Kassapa Thero, Venerable Panyavansa Thero can contribute about this in briefly, because we have opened this forum for the discussion. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you. As you heard from Venerable Panyavansa, you take basically one object for your meditation. Now, for Rahula, the suggested object for his concentration meditation was breathing. That was well guided by Venerable Sariputta. So he was breathing and contemplating and now reaching to his jhanas. And based on jhanas, he was now at the doorstep of Nibbana. At that time, the states of the mind of Venerable Rahula was seen by the Buddha. And then he thought, now this is the time, the triggering point, to help him to attain Nibbana. Then, further development of his understanding of vipassana, or knowledge, now this forms eye consciousness and the contact, and through contact what is arisen, the formations, feelings, perception, etc., etc., they all are at this point the objects for his contemplation of impermanence. Contemplation of impermanence. So I suspect Venerable Rahula should have been either a lustful character or character of faith, predominant character. Because he should have been faithful to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha so immensely. Therefore, this object, this contemplation of impermanence works with faith character. Then, when he was contemplating on impermanence, his gateway of, or the entrance to Nibbana should be signless, animitta. Therefore, he continues to practice further on the impermanence of this eye and ear, nose, etc., etc., all these bases and their consciousness, their contact, etc. So this is Sammasana area where he is contemplating on the Anicca, Dukkha and Anatta. Anitya, Dukkha and Anatta. So since he is either lustful or faithful to the character wise, he should have seen all phenomena as impermanent. So he opened the gateway of signless, and therefore he realized everything is impermanent. Therefore, what is impermanent is subject to suffering. And what is subject to suffering is non-self, or there's nothing to take as self. If he would have been predominantly concentration character, he could have seen this sankhara or nama rupa as desirous, appanihata. Hence it could have been appanihata vimukta, gateway of desire. Or if could have been wise or wisdom character, it could have been anatta and sunyatanu pasana. So his way could have been saddha into anicca and anicca anupassana towards signless animitta anupassana vimokka. So anyhow, his knowledge is ripened to understand this, to get this vipassana knowledge one by one, and then he with the help of the Buddha, finally Venerable Rahula could reach the enlightenment by practicing on the vipassana based on this eye consciousness, etc., etc.
Okay, we open this forum for the discussion to the audience. Then Rahula Monk, one way he had overcome, or he had destroyed all the taints, kilesas. Another way he had developed good wisdom. Then he became enlightened. This is the Chula Rahulavada Sutta. Any question, please, we are not perfect. Any question you can ask if you are not clear. Yeah.